Learning History Rocks will introduce you to an amazing educator and talk about his new approach to teaching history. Deep, rich discussions about education reform. Is that even possible? Our activist of the week thinks so. Of course, Matt Damon's mom checks in. We will run down what's trending in education news and have a moment of zen. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Jed Hopkins. It's time to take a look at the top trending news stories in education. Number one.
Personalized learning, one-to-one computing, technology, all the rage, not anymore. Kids gone wild. What am I talking about, Jed?
I don't know.
Well, check this out. In Denmark, there's a kindergarten where kids, their job is to go outside and hit trees with sticks. They get knives and they're allowed to carve spears. Back to the wild, caveman type of stuff. In fact, this school founded by Johan Ligard takes the idea and says, look, kindergarten, kids need to be outside. This whole one-to-one computing nonsense, we got to get rid of it. Technology is actually destroying childhood.
I love it. It's courting danger in a educational way.
One of the things, though, that comes out of the article, it says if you're one of these parents that has to know where your kid is all the time, this is not the kindergarten for you.
It sounds like my childhood.
So you were out there carving shanks and stuff.
Sure,
you know,
sure what.
Getting ready for the jails of Birmingham.
Absolutely.
All right.
It's made me what I am today, Tim.
All this talk about kids gone wild, playing in the forest, doing what it is that kids do, being away from technology. I wonder what Matt Damon's mom would say about technology.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
You know, all of this talk about technology and the emphasis on it and all the money put towards it and the idea that you've got to give an iPad to every student in the first grade and keep up with the other school that's doing that. Really, you know, the whole thing is snake oil. Because no study, not that personally I don't feel that I need a study to tell me this, but there isn't any study or any research or any evidence anywhere that using any of this technology, iPads or computers, smartphones or any of it, improves the quality of learning for kids. What it does is it distracts people from the deeper, more important, serious issues in education that we have to be thinking about. It makes everybody think if you get these tools, you're going to actually improve education, but it just isn't true. Not that there isn't a place for technology, because I think there is, but it's just been completely overblown and exaggerated in terms of the role that it can have. But sure, there's some situations where you'd have some blended learning that you might choose for a specific situation, a specific student, specific circumstance. For me, it would only be like high school kids, because I wouldn't want to see, I don't like to see any kind of online learning for any younger children. But anytime you do that, though, you're trading off. You might accomplish a certain kind of learning that might have value for a specific situation, but you're also taking away then the opportunity for group learning or for learning in context, collaborative learning. And it gets us to this question of what are schools really for? Because they aren't places just to learn specific skills and concepts. They're also places where we learn to get along with other people, to make decisions as a group. We learn citizenship skills that are going to help young people become participating citizens in a democracy when they grow up. The school has a much wider purpose and a role in society and in students' and children's lives than just simply getting answers to questions.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
Can a teacher rock? Can his subject matter rock even harder? Andrew Larson and his history class do. Andrew, welcome to Busted Pencils.
Thanks for having me on, guys. It's really cool to be here.
I'm a social studies guy, teacher. That's my original thing. I love it. American history. Can't find anything about it. Even if you gave me the most boring United States history, anything, I thought it was exciting. Other kids, not so, right?
That's true. You know, that was how I was when I was a kid because I became a history teacher. I loved the stories. I really enjoyed, got goosebumps on my arm when I listened to the I Have a Dream speech, for example. And I wanted to know more about that sort of thing in the civil rights movement. But there are hundreds of kids that just think history is a boring list.
So that's, I mean, we're history geek.
You can't
make it boring. But for most people, they don't understand and they think it's boring. Enter your idea here, which is what we're talking about, this whole idea that's coming in. Next year in your school, you're going to teach a course that incorporates rock and roll and American history. Bring the two together.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Well, what's really exciting is at Verona, they are really kind of a place where they allow you to have some entrepreneurship of ideas. And so what I did is I just thought to myself, well, you know, there's this really nice chronological approach to teaching history from the 50s to the present. And why not take the 50s, for example, let's just use that as an example. You're teaching about the Cold War and the Civil Rights Movement. Well, why don't you, along with that in parallel, teach what's going on in popular culture music and really have a fun time with that. And I think the kids would really soak it in.
Because, I mean, we've always had music, right? I mean, music is moved with us, with human beings, I mean, all the, you know, so there's always this music, and the music reflects, well, what does it reflect? It reflects moods. It reflects ways of being, right? You know, so
you're kind of talking about this. I think about, there's a natural connection when you start saying we're going to talk about history and then music. Well, of course music is part of the history in the culture.
Yeah, it's really about the culture. And what's really interesting about the 1950s is there's such a cultural movement going on for the civil rights movement. And when you're talking about the explosion of like blues and R&B coming out, like songs like Rocket 88, you know, those are powerful songs that are really kind of shaking the foundations of the establishment at the time. And they're really making a movement. The music is actually part of the history. Mm-hmm. And that's really what excites learners, I think. I think learners are excited about the popular culture and the music that's being made in some cases in garages, you know, and out it comes, you know.
They say all the best things come out of a garage. The Ramones, you name it, right?
Yeah. You know, so I'm a Brit, come from across the pond and all that. And I'm always like moved by the fact that after the Second World War, when there was a great deal of depression, especially amongst the working class folks, you know, after the war, you could imagine the state of everything. And a lot of young people were kind of abandoned by the elders, really, who had just gone through the war, you know, if they survived it, you know. And somehow or another, the music of, African-American blues would touch these young people. Especially, you know, so you got these, if you look at the ports around England, like places like Liverpool and London, you know, where it was fairly easy to get hold of records, you got access then to this world of music. And there was like a connection between what these blues players were singing and what these, you know, these young kids were feeling. Many of them hadn't even seen a black person, and yet there was this incredible sort of bond, and the rest is history in a way.
I think that's a really interesting point that you make, because I do understand that England was really bombed a lot during World War II, and they were in a really poor shape. And to even hear that story of that angle is sort of what this class is about. You know, that's what's exciting, because you're making a strong connection between history and music. Right. And that's fascinating. That's what the class is supposed to do. And hopefully students that are in the class will be able to start making those personal connections like you just did, Jed, to the material. And that's what I think is really exciting about the class. Because it's not going to be a class where you sit in front of the room and you lecture at students for 4 weeks in a row. It's going to be more like putting out questions and having them explore where these things go and helping them expose them to different styles of music and find out where things come from, you know.
And say nothing of the fact that the kids are going to be listening to the music in a different way, right? I mean, there's going to be like it's not just music.
Correct.
It's music that is saying something.
Well, it situates the time periods, right? I mean, that's one of the beautiful things about the music you were talking about. I mean, they reflect the culture of the time. And so now, as you move into this history course, and we talk about the problem with teaching history to students who sometimes find it boring, and rightfully so, let's be honest, that a lot of history teachers have done a lot of damage to the learning of history by making it really crappy and boring. What's your connection, though, to rock and roll, Andy?
Well, my connection goes way back to the day because my parents used to listen to Bob Dylan at home on records. So there was a big record collection at home. And so we were always listening to 60s and 70s era music, Beach Boys and such. And we really I fell in love with vinyl as a young boy. And then they would take me to the Memorial Union where there would always be bands out on that terrace in the 70s. And I wanted to be in a band. And I just couldn't stop listening to records. And I was at the Madison Public Library, and I put on those plastic old-fashioned headphones, and I'd wear out their vinyl right there in that art and music room. Then I got in some bands, and I've been playing in the German art students here in Madison. I play the bass guitar. I'm very passionate about rock and roll. I've been on some tours and done some things, and I've gone to a lot of shows, and I do some DJing, and I just love music. And at the high school, I started a program called the Department of Rock, which I got approved through the site council. And the Department of Rock really was about a battle of the bands, really, yeah. Where rock bands would come on. I've been doing this for about 20 years out there. We've always had bands.
Oh, cool.
And so they get to, you know, plug in some amplifiers and make some noise out there in the big theater at the high school.
The
high school, yeah, yeah. It's great. And then we stemmed that into a variety show where kids can play acoustic guitar if they want to, piano or dance. It's turned into a real kind of cornucopia of arts.
Cool.
And it's really cool. And until this rock and roll class came out, really, it was just happening very locally and very organically just in the school of Verona itself.
You are listening to Busted Pencils Fully Leaded Education Talk. We are talking to teacher Andy Larson. Rock and roll history. Rock and roll history will be coming to the schools in Madison, Wisconsin, in the Verona School District next fall. Andy, hard rock, classic rock, punk rock, which one?
Well,
folk rock.
You know, the thing is, the goal of this is to not necessarily, there'll be so many different kids taking it. Mm-hmm. And so there's a real equity issue at our school, and we're really kind of concentrating on equity. And so what we're hoping is that some kids will want to listen to rhythm and blues. They want to listen to salsa. They might want to listen to hard rock, jazz, pop, hip hop, whatever. And I'm hoping that just the fact that we're calling it rock and roll isn't going to be too limiting, and because we really want to make sure that we're cross our culture. And through the course of time of teaching the class, if we continue to personalize their education so they can choose what they want to listen to, and then, you know, if they really like hip hop or they really like jazz or they really want to explore country, for example, I mean, there's no reason in this class that they couldn't do that. And as a matter of fact, I think it would be appropriate. And I think it would then, through the course of time, kids will start learning that this class is exploratory, and they will be able to learn.
We'd have to draw the line at country, though, I think, don't you? Come on.
So everything has its roots.
Okay, everything has its roots. All right. Now, just not picking on country, but...
That's fine enough.
Okay.
But I don't want to limit anybody's ability to say, hey, but I really want to go in that direction. And if a student comes to me and says, I want to explore this, why, you know, that's what makes the class exciting, because yeah, sure. Now they've got a path to go. And they just need some fuel to take that trip, you know what I mean? And whatever that trip is going to be as far as the music goes, I think that's what's going to connect the learning.
When you had the idea for this class and you presented it first to, I guess, administrators or colleagues, maybe probably even first, you know, how was it received?
My colleagues were extremely supportive.
I bet they were jealous.
Yeah, they were jealous. Like, why didn't I think of that, man?
Yeah, what's this Larson?
Larson.
Yes, Larson.
Dude, Larson.
they were very supportive, and they asked lots of questions, and they unanimously passed it. Mm-hmm. And once it passes that procedure, it then goes on to the site council at the high school. And I made a presentation similar to the way I'm speaking to you now.
So the listener knows, a site council at your school consists of teachers and parents and administrators.
That's right.
Of the district that represent that. So I just want to make that clear.
Absolutely.
So that's who you presented this to.
Absolutely unanimous. Unanimous, cool. not a single no vote.
Wow.
It was really cool.
Were you excited by that?
I was so excited. I had goosebumps. goosebumps going up my arms. I was like, this is going to be great. Kids are going to think this is fantastic. This is a great opportunity.
Taking that great opportunity then, so how's it been? I mean, what's the buzz?
The buzz is amazing because we got the article in the newspaper last week. People are really wondering what this class is going to be like. So there's a real curiosity factor.
Well, in fact, that was the question I was going to ask you. So, I mean, are you ready for class in next fall, day one? Is it, you know, do you have the Marshall amp lined up?
And, I do, actually.
You know, have you resurrected one of the Ramones to come in and do a guest appearance?
I do have a Marshall in the room.
Okay, you got
That's
a Marshall
true.
In the
There's
room.
There's a drum set in the room. Okay. You got to come out and see it. I think you're going to have to take a field trip. There is a lot of power in that room from all the Department of Rock. You see, I built that from scratch, and you should see the PA I've got out there. You'd probably really like it. But the thing
is— Does it turn up to 11?
Oh, yes. there's a lot going on in that room. And the cool thing is, would I be ready to teach it tomorrow? Yes, because I'm a 25-year veteran. I could put something together and have it ready to go. But to be honest with you, next to my bed at home, I've got a pile of books from Rolling Stone and Trouser Press, and I am just hitting the pavement, reading and gathering the knowledge. I feel like once I get the knowledge, then I feel like I can start doing the cool things. You know, there's a lot of discussion in education today about, hey, we want our kids to do these really fantastic, neat projects. But the important thing I want to emphasize is I think kids need to be, before they can do the cool project, they have to know the foundations. Yeah. They need to know the roots of where this all comes from. So the first day of class, what do you listen to and why?
You're thinking of, for the first run of this course, kind of starting, you know, chronologically in the 50s.
That's
and
right.
Do you see still chronologically through in the 50s going through the present? Or
Okay, so we are going to cook through the present. The deal will be this. First week of school, what do you listen to and why? It's all going to be about now.
Okay.
I'm going to make it all about now because it's going to be all relevant. What is 2016? What are you doing now? And we're going to design some projects, which I'm not sure exactly what those will be yet. But there will be some cool projects where they're going to do some things, okay? And then the goal will be to go, all right, here's where we are now. Where did this come from? And I think that will hook them in, and we'll go back to the 50s, and I think they'll want to know. I'm not going to go backwards in time. I think that's a mistake. I think we got to go way back and then show change over time, which is good historical practice.
Well, I think from being a history person, the whole idea of taking it right to them in their present, where they are locating it, situating it, that's wonderful because now they have a place and then jump backwards, and so they see the relevance. The connection between what happened in the past to my life today are one of those ways that I've had a lot of success when I teach history of helping people understand that history.
You know, I sense you're a great educator. And what makes you a great educator is you've created excitement, anticipation, and in a way, kind of mystery. Because, you're very knowledgeable about your history and you're very knowledgeable about your music. But I sense this class will never be this. You'll never do the same class twice.
Oh, never.
Right.
Oh, it's going to be fabulous.
And that's really important, isn't it? Because that means that the experience that you are providing for kids is really responsive to whatever comes up.
And what they want to do, right?
Right.
Their
right.
path, right? Yes.
Right. And that's we're losing that in educational talk.
So, Andy,
I want to be in this class.
You are welcome. You're so welcome.
I'm going to lose my co-host to Andy Larson's rock and roll, not rock and roll history class, but history using rock and roll. It's not, right?
Right.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come on Busted Pencils. I know Jed and I are both excited. Randy, our producer engineer back there, he's probably going to be at your class on the first day in September.
I'm thrilled.
You know, but thanks a lot for spending the time, and we're really excited, and we're glad to be a part of this. And so Busted Pencils thanks you. And Jed, what do we want to tell them?
Keep busting those pencils, man.
Well, I thank you very much.
This is Busted Pencils Radio. Fully leaded education talk.
He's a nationally board certified teacher with a master's in secondary science education. He taught for 23 years in Oakland, California, and is the author of the blog Living in Dialogue. Welcome to Busted Pencils, our activist of the week, Anthony Cody. Anthony, the first time I discovered your blog was when it was featured in Ed Week. How did that come about?
I started working on national policy stuff with something called the Center for Teaching Quality, which was headquartered in North Carolina. and there was a protege of Linda Darling Hammond's by the name of Barnett Berry who was running that. So he was looking for people to work on a project, a report, actually on teacher pay. And so she recommended me. I got hooked up with CTQ and then with something called the Teacher Leaders Network. They had a relationship with EdWeek, where they were providing EdWeek with articles and blogs and so on. I started getting some stuff published through that in EdWeek, and then eventually got the blog back in 2008.
Why the title?
Well, that title was suggested by John Norton, who was working with the Teacher Leaders Network at the time, and it's sort of connected to the letter from the Birmingham jail that Martin Luther King wrote, where he talked about, we have not spent enough time in dialogue with one another. And so, you know, it was a time, 2008 was a time of rising contention over a lot of issues related to education reform. And so I thought it was important to stake out some space for real critical dialogue. And that's what I tried to do with the blog. You know, I tried to use the blog to engage my readers in dialogue and also to engage, you know, people in power in some critical dialogue, like people at the Department of Education or at the Gates Foundation, people that were responsible or sponsoring some of these asinine reforms.
Yeah, so Antonina, living in dialogue, it's a beautiful sentiment. Looking back now over the years, are we living in dialogue?
Well, it's dialogue of a sort. It's a rather frustrating form of dialogue where I think, you know, it's sort of like Horton Hears a Who. You know, we're down in Whoville trying to get ourselves heard. Sometimes it feels like that, and we don't always feel like we are heard. One of the things I did, I started a thing called Teachers' Letters to Obama. We had a conversation with Secretary Duncan. This was back in 2010, and that sort of led into the organizing the Save Our Schools March. And some of the folks who were involved in the Save Our Schools March had been involved in that Teachers' Letters to Obama. We sort of realized we weren't being heard just as, you know, in this polite state of saying, please, sir, you know, why don't you listen to people who know what they're talking about instead of these economists who don't know anything about what happens in a classroom.
You know, in one way, maybe the dialogue hasn't gone both ways with, say, people pushing draconian or, as you just said, asinine reforms, Anthony. But one of the things I think living in dialogue has done over the years, and for me, you know, first of all, it introduced me to you and the dialogue between bloggers and activists that you've promoted has been, you know, that has been priceless.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it'd be interesting to look back at Living in Dialogue and see all the people who got their first published words in there.
Right, I was one of them. You invited me.
You were
me.
One of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Peggy Robertson,
who's
been very active in Save Our Schools. A lot of people that, you know, I was kind of had my, you know, network out looking for people that were writing or saying interesting things and would invite them to comment. And that was the time, or to write for guest posts. And that was before. Now we sort of take it for granted there's literally hundreds of people blogging about education from a critical standpoint. But back in 2008, 2009, that really wasn't the case. So I think Living in Dialogue did help to sort of build some of that momentum.
Living in Dialogue is not on EdWeek. Living in Dialogue has gone independent. So what's that about? How did that happen? How's that going?
Well, I took it independent in 2014, and so after 6 years at Education Week. And, you know, it's going okay. I felt at the time that it was really important to have sort of independent outlet for critical viewpoint that weren't sort of controlled by, even though Education Week is a nonprofit, it's largely driven by foundation funding. And although they didn't really try to control my message, I just felt that it was really a value to me into the sort of the movement that was growing to have our own outlet that were independent. So I partnered with Vincent Precht, who's a teacher in Los Angeles. He's very into video, and so he's been doing a great job at sharing videos from around the country. I sort of have my niche of issues that I'm particularly expert in related to the Gates Foundation, some of the teacher evaluation stuff, some of the assessment, the role of technology. Some of those things are things where I feel like sometimes I have something, you know, insightful to say.
The blog is Living in Dialogue. They can get there by going to livingindialogue.com now because it is independent. Thanks for all that you do and all the writing. And Jed, what do we say?
Yeah, I just want to say you've made a really important impact on the blogosphere. And Anthony Cody, keep busting those pencils, man.
All right.
This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted pencils.
Now, our weekly tribute to legendary historian Howard Zinn. This is your moment of Zinn.
Education becomes most rich and alive when it confronts the reality of moral conflict in the world. Howard Zinn, from You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train, A Personal History of Our Times.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Also, log on to BustedPencils.com to keep up with trending news, hear parts of the show, and nominate an activist of the week. For Jed Hopkins, I'm Tim Slecker, and thanks for Busting Pencils.